Business of Fusion Method. My name is Tado McKenzie, and I'm the chairperson of the Scrummer team. On my left side, my colleague working with me, Wasima, and on the far left, the Basimse, also working with me on the Scrummer team. I'm going to ask the members to introduce themselves. This is Basimse. I'm going to ask the members on the left to introduce myself and the three main team, then we'll start with the introductory Scrummer team.
From PMG.
Can you speak to my name?
Oh, sorry. I'm Denise Matthews from PMG. Pardon? Oh. Okay. Yeah. It is on. Okay. Again. Thank you. Yeah. Sorry about that. I'm Denise Matthews from PMG.
Thank you.
I'm Oscar Lee from PTF.
Thank you. Members, today we're doing the last year's annual report, 2018-2019. Advertisement for this committee meeting was placed in the Argus, Devoto, and Bukhani. And the discussion this morning will focus for the year under review 2018-2019. First of all, you look at me like... We have received no apologies for this meeting, but this meeting is really positive, so we will continue. So one member is joining us quickly. Can you introduce yourself, member?
Good morning, everyone.
Jimmy, I'm going to hand over immediately to you and the SOD to give us your overview.
Thank you very much, Chair. Obviously, two of us have been the two hot seats here today. Are reporting on the last year of the previous Parliament, the first Parliament. Myself, obviously reporting now in that position, but obviously this was in the review held by the previous Premier, and of course with the
touch on particularly on the first statement, and then we'll go into the questions. Maybe just a little part around context, this department forms part of strategical part, you will recall that we have five strategic goals previously. And in fact, the major focus was on embedding good governance, as well as integrated service delivery and issue around partnerships. And this department executed its role within that context. And then in addition to that, obviously, PSG 5 also has a transversal role of connecting all the activities of government across the various departments as well as public entities, and also to connect with municipalities as well as the national departments. So you will see on the team that year, started by five programs. We've got five programs. One, obviously, dealing with executive support, which mainly focused internally on the vote, and the other four programs focusing on the transversal role that this department needs to play. Obviously, the main issue is we render transversal services through the Corporate Services Centre to 11 of the 13 departments out there. That's in relation to HR, internal audit, legal services, in fact, legal services to all the departments out there. And then also the issue of enterprise forensic management services and all the related corporate services. And then the other programs, in essence, deals with the provincial strategic management responsibilities. That's in essence, which is around the provincial strategic plan, provincial wide governance, monitoring, prevention, implementation, keeping government accountable. And then also in relation to the corporate service center, most of the stuff is existed within the program 3 and then obviously program 4. Although it forms part of the corporate service center, then we have a transversal service in relation to corporate CI or ICT environments, effectively dealing with the entire suite of ICT support of this project. So that's more or less what this department is made up. We've got about 1.5 billion. We will report on that in the sessions for this scope. And in the report, you will see how generally we've achieved most of our own objectives, and we are yet to give a particular depiction of what has happened over the year, and hopefully also give you some sort of sense about the plans moving forward. Chair, there's a matter that I've also raised with you previously. I think we need to create an opportunity at an appropriate time, potentially maybe before this financial year is over, to actually take the committee through a little bit of more detail of what this department is actually about, and that we can just share, given the fact that it's a new community, some further details, so that when you engage with us, that you're actually more informed, particularly to the new members, and ultimately improve your oversight responsibility, as well as obviously our responsibility to report to Parliament from the accountability perspective. So we will try, with the committee support, at the time arrange that session hopefully before this financial year is completed and all the other requirements. So Chair, we are here and available to respond to the annual report that was taken from the Parliament. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Premier. And actually, members, what I'm going to do, because we were in a very a unique situation between me and the HOD, both of you, but as to come in front of this committee, I'd like to include some pages with the overview, if you're comfortable with that, from page 11 to 25. When you ask questions on the overview, you can also include page 11 to 25, because that might assist us in the questioning going forward. So let's do that, and then I'll then give each member 5 minutes to ask questions on the overview, including that. But if there is any burning questions, obviously we'll be flexible. But just think it's a standard guideline, I'll give each member 5 minutes to ask questions on the overview, including and up to page 25. Is anybody comfortable with that? Okay? So while members are going, can I go first in the meantime? If we can go to page number 14 of the annual report, please, I should be in premium. Page number 14. And I'm showing you what the ADP is also here. and then page 3 of the APP. So my question is, can you just clarify the following, please? On page number 14, it says, during the 2018-2019 financial year, the growth of the department was 3% after a further budget cut was imposed. And then if you look on the APP on page number 3, it says that despite the nationally initiated cut of just under 4% to the indicated baseline, we remain committed to improve the efficiency. This might be some clarity between what was done and what was achieved. Member Lafon. Yeah, you can start the question.
Thank you very much.
I'm passing the clock on this.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just like to start on page 11, supported by the Premier, there's reference there to the rolling out of limited broadband to municipalities, with 18 having been connected by the 31st of March. I just want to actually get a sense of what does it actually mean, limited broadband, and what existed there before, what does the fact that they now have limited broadband actually mean, and in regard to where we are now, in October of 2019, have we managed now to reach a total of 30 municipalities, or are we still short of that number, and what exactly is being provided? Because I presume before this program started, it's not as though municipality does not have some form of that program. So what exactly is the value add? And then over the page, on page 12, and we understand that the Premier said that at the beginning, and he's supporting on the year, when he wasn't actually the Premier, but I think on page 12, we begin to see there the Premier actually introducing priorities which he has determined. And I don't have an issue with the priorities change, but I think the description of the priorities is a concern. I would like the Premier to address two of those issues, because, for instance, there's reference to economic growth and the descriptions of problems in which hard work and education bring about success. You know, the whole notion of inclusive economic growth, I think, is a critical one given the inequality. So Is it an ideological problem with the notion of inclusive economic growth, or does the Premier have a view on whether that's such an important objective, also look at issues of ownership patterns in our economy? And then the other prioritised area is transport and spatial transformation. That is something described as a province in which your life-based value, no matter where you live or work. Now, my understanding of that priority is that we're actually trying to reverse the legacy of apartheid spatial planning as far as possible. But in the description of that, it's a very kind of neutral description which says that your life has value no matter where you live. It doesn't imply that there's going to be an actual program to reverse apartheid spatial planning. So I just want to ask the Premier what his response to that concern is. And then, you know, also to say that in the current situation, the Premier has put by the jobs warning a safety cabinet. And I would just like to ask, how do these, at a structural level, and where does the support lie for the jobs warning after? So you can describe whether the safety cabinet will be an additional meeting, or whether it will just be said to the agenda of every cabinet meeting. And then the Premier could also indicate to us, in terms of his own private office, how many special advisors has he appointed in this to our trying as hard as possible to avoid.
Member Dutton, we are dealing with the other review.
Yes, that's fine. That's fine. But you would agree with me, Chair, in the forward of the Premier is beginning to put forward his own priorities, which is safety, spatial planning, so that's why, and on the economy, so that's why I'm asking on the jobs board and the safety cabinet. And then, if I could go to page 13, under the report of the department officer, in regard to the corporate services centre, imply that the people management function includes the monitoring and evaluation of what's going on in the different departments. Now, one of the departments where we've actually seen a decline in terms of audit performance in education, there's been a regression there. And if you actually look at the performance, there's reference in the paper to the decline in terms of the results of the education department. Now, one of the issues there which we are informed is contributing to tension is the fact that of 43 senior managers, there are only two African senior managers there. And the tensions which the lack of a diverse department is actually creating. So can I just ask the accounting officer, is this something that the Premier department has picked up in regard to why there's tensions in that department and a reversal in regard to both audit outcomes plus academic outcomes in the education department? Have they picked up these concerns? Maybe that's more for people management to consider. But there are some warning signs there. And on page 15 on the program expenditure, in 2017-2018 there was under expenditure of almost 40 million, which is now just 46 million in the year under review. Could we just have a sense there, it seems a lot of those have been in regard to staff attrition, and maybe just a broad comment, because if you go further down and when you look at the section on human resources for people management oversight, I think there's over 55% of the cases of people leaving the service who don't give any reason as to why they are there. And that appears to be why there's been an underspending because of staff attrition. And then on page 16, there's reference there to fruitless wasteful expenditure and also irregular expenditure. There's a reference to 8 cases of amounting to 3 million, which are still under investigation. I think, Chair, under resolution, I think we'll ask the Council for broad information about this, but that seems to be, a considerable amount of money, almost 3.5 million in cases. Could we just have a sense of how far we were resolving those cases and so on? Then I would refer to go all the way up to I'll stop there for now.
Member Fernandez.
Chairperson, with reference to page 16 to irregular expenditure, as mentioned, of 18 cases under investigation, awaiting condemnation. Can you guys get an update on that? And on page 24 and 25, with reference to the organizational structure, how many of those processes are open?
Short and sweet, Member Rodriguez.
Members, I can have some of my members as well. It would probably be a miss not to mention the former Premier's name here, considering the work that she has done. But I would like to see what we got to the Premier on page 11, mentioning a people-centered approach, and then the Director General also mentioning these remarks regarding citizen-centric approaches. If I can give more elaboration on what that means and how you see that being implemented. But also the fact that the department has received 5 consecutive clean audits. And it might seem outrageous to say that at times clean audits could be a stumbling block to having a sense of value for money. If you look at it in that way and you use on it to see how could we see that not to only look at clean audits, but to see how can we have value for money? And then on page 17 and 18, with regard to the Western Cape government's digital government strategy, is there any plan in the pipeline to look at public-private partnerships in that way? Because I've noted up until now, there's been no formal public-private partnerships here. Thank you.
Member Malindi, and also another chairperson from Stokoe. I can see Ivar here from this morning with you. The double watching, you go ahead.
have two specific questions and one general question. One is just on the complete level, just on the forward by the team, the department maintaining average of 94% achievement, which I think is commendable. Anything above 60% is good, so 95% is excellent. But it might be good sometimes to just say, happy that 6%. Always good, because when 6% is a really small number, then you can say what are those things we need so that we don't, we might be able to deal with those preliminaries. It might be good if maybe they can be some highlight of what is that 6%. But also related to that is the thing that is on the PD's forward. Now, the teacher said it's 92%, maybe, I know on the following page, it does mention also 95%. What is the difference with on page 14, there is something that is in current, the sentence there on the top. It says, this was leading to increased emphasis on monitoring and reporting on performance across the core management department to strengthen internal control. Now, sometimes what is really key in terms of accountability, monitoring. Maybe it is very specifically how frequently that monitoring is done. But then one general question that relating to organizational issues and this in 3 minutes 24 as well. Now, as I was looking, unless maybe I've missed it, it might be somewhere in the report. When it comes to organizational measures, issues of representativity so far as employment equity is concerned, apart from the issues of employment equity or equity in terms of trees, also equity goes further to the issues of democracy, designated groups, and so on. When it comes to demographic, the issues of representation of young people, very senior management, if they are academically qualified, there's nothing wrong for young people to be represented at that level. That goes the same with women as well as people with disability. So why I'm raising this as a general question, because I didn't see it anywhere in the report being spoken about issues of employment equity in that department of training. For example, in front of me, it's a very good representativity in terms of population group, which is in the province. That's a very good thing. Not only say that good representation, but also it does not mean that we must not look into the issues of disability group. It talks to your women as well as people with disability. Unless maybe my other disability, I don't see any representativity of disability. Of welfare, disabilities might be, you can see it, but others are hidden. And in some instances, some people say, sometimes people don't disclose when they are disabled. But those will happen, and those people will be represented only if we begin to ask those questions. And to say, I am not disabled. But also, another strong component, while the fair representation, we all know in terms of our statistics, the majority of gender in the country is women. Now, if I do think about it, I don't think there is good, even fair representation of women. So I think we should also like to get a report on that. And lastly, very underrepresented is the issue of African, because when employment equity talks about white or black, there's no in between. Then black is defined as colored, Indian, and African. Those are X in terms of the employment equity. But if I again and let my eyes are deceived with me, you know, that you know, the issue of African is very underrepresented. And again, I would say, if my eyes deceive me, because I'm just commenting based on what I see in the country. That was a general question because it was no way in the report why I did it under observation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Member Zimbi. The last member in the class.
Thank you, Chairman.
Youth unemployment, mean, it's really one of the highest unemployment, the highest unemployment in the world. If we look at correcting the injustices of the past and making sure that we create an inclusive future economy, obviously that is exactly where we've got to be. That, if we link that back to probably this main project in the and specifically how broadband and where it is landed within these municipalities is to make sure that we are putting broadband in places that in general the economy might not invest in broadband, to specifically start correcting those and those injustices of the past, but creating that inclusive future, creating those opportunities for the future in the economy, and of course having a future plan. And you know, whether it is spatial planning within a municipality like the City of Cape Town, or whether it's Stellenbosch or both of which, how do we in every one of these municipalities find spaces and ways? And of course, you know, as we, and I know we're under review, but as we go forward into this new government, what is it that we're going to be doing? How do we make sure, from a planning point of view, that we create that environment? If I think about the discussion that the mayor and I had at our just post our national heritage day, where Minister Toshkiza was here, and having a discussion around district 6 and saying we've got action to be on the politics now. Now we've got to really start to make these things happen. I mean, 25 years later, we can't. And so, I mean, I'll say that to this committee here, that that is definitely part of where I need us to go as a government. Again, my safety plan, and I'll speak to those second questions. Same meeting, we will be on under review. This was still a time when we had a delivery unit. That delivery unit is no longer there. And as I said to the rooftop management, the ETM and the cabinet are actually the delivery unit of this government. And so that unit is no longer. Although I have already talked to you of the four special advisor posts, each of those posts are to their contracts. The one is Don Grant, who was the minister in the previous cabinet. He's helping me specifically around the transport issues, which is also one of the questions that get asked here. We really have to deal with congestion, we have to deal with mobility, we have to deal with access. Food transport, and it's not only the congestion in the city, but transport issues are a big issue across this province. People, if you think about access to education, access to healthcare, access to jobs, so it's something that we really have to focus on. And that's why also doing the jobs, war room transport is one of the issues. How do we get mobility right and access to mobility? The other is obviously much more strategic. The other special advisor, that is Nick Helen. He's helping devising the strategic directions for the key years. Then corporate services, I think that's specifically the PERO, the education system, and the monitoring of the whole of government. Citizen-centric or citizen-focused, whether it's me, whether it's the state or the government, whether it's only here the DG speak. Obviously, that at the end of the day, what we do, we're focusing on our clients. In this department, we have two sets of clients. One is obviously the role that we play with our other client departments. But I think at the end of the day, whatever happens, the most important client is obviously the citizen. And that's what we need to be doing as a government, serving our clients, which are the citizens. But it maybe leads into that next question about audits versus delivery. And I think, and I said that in the State of the Province address, we understand why we focus on audits and on good governance, and there was a key strategic directive of this previous 5 years, and of course this year under review, our PSG5, how do we get good governance in place, because once you've got good governance in place, you can then move on. So, and I think obviously the members of this committee, we see it all day, every day, that a clean audit doesn't necessarily mean that you've got perfect service delivery on the ground. It actually doesn't mean that at all. So how do we move to that next level? And I think that will be the focus now. You will see the next time that this review happens, that good governance strategic objective now looks much more at our citizens, our clients. It looks at how do we have good governance as a habit, but we've got to move beyond the habits to do it. I think that specifically again, Honourable Wimby, the questions that you asked, we will deal with them, but also page 112, 113, and 114, 115 of this document really goes into the detail of the questions you asked around equity, breaking it down into gender, breaking it down, obviously those are things that you need to manage and monitor, but also I think the team should be able to answer that. I think the question around broadband, service excellence, tech, the fourth industrial revolution, where are we going to? That's specifically why this massive investment is taking place into broadband, understanding that this is coming at us. And of course, it is the big question that everybody's asking, whether it's globally, via the World Economic Forum, or the questions that we have to ask. what does this mean for jobs? And so, you know, whether it's in this department dealing with tech, dealing with our own rollout and the enabling environment versus every single other department in this government. I think about the work that agriculture did with our University of Stellenbosch, which did exactly that because agriculture employs so many people in our region, and what is the impact of the fourth industrial revolution on people in that space. And I think a lot of people get quite nervous of it. I'm quite excited about it because it really does create huge opportunity for the future, and you can see it on the back of the broadband rollout. You can see that the investment into broadband and the differences that this makes specifically in a number of our areas that are seen as poorer areas, and how when you make this broadband available across our municipalities, it really creates opportunity. But I think on a practical example, I remember from a policy of this government 10 years ago when I first came in and was given the executive office, there was a policy of the government around the broadband rollout that said we have to manually dig trenches to put in broadband piping. And I still remember the company showcasing the difference. We were about 650 kilometers of broadband layout behind the cities of Durban and the cities of Johannesburg. And because we elected to manually dig the trenches, and then they showed that the special vehicle that would lay that pipeline, it would drive along at 6 kilometers an hour, dig the hole in the road, it's about a 4 centimeter wide hole, lay the pipeline, fills the hole, tar it up behind, and moves it 6 kilometers an hour. And it takes 118 feet. So even though technology was being used, it was creating a whole range of jobs. And I think exactly the same thing if I think about agriculture and what happened post the strikes that we saw in 2013 and in the agricultural sector. And many agricultural companies started to mechanize. And we saw a drop in jobs, 65,000 jobs dropped. And within a year and a half, we surpassed those jobs again, and I think we were back up by 118,000 jobs. And because what happens is the technology does actually enable expansion and growth, but it's how you manage it and how you put the skills to it. And of course, that being not necessarily in this department, but the Department of Economic Development, and skills alignment to those tech jobs is very, very important. We've got to make sure that we get that right. I think there's also a question around the rules in general. I'm sure we'll answer that as we go through.
Might even be
particular requirements to that department in terms of maybe requiring additional capacity support to enhance their pitch on fishes. And then obviously the issue on fish and will also try and pick that up. Maybe just in relation to the issues around the audits and the auditor general, I think we're on record where we're saying that we're looking at innovative or different ways. Obviously, we can't determine the standards, or the general can determine the standards, but we've already started the discussions with them around auditing for outcomes. So what we're saying by that is that we're saying that we're not moving away from the good government brand per se, you know, meaning that you will, you know, practice the principles of good governance around accountability, transparency, following the rule of law, etc. But there's more to good governance than just mere compliance. And when we realize that, I mean, mere compliance comes with a huge cost to the citizen. That's not only the physical money that we pay, but also the cost of making people available to do what they claim to do. So we, over the last past 5 years, we've pushed the good governance agenda very, very hard in relation to compliance, and we believe that we're at the stage now where we need to move to governance for performance. And that takes you to the space of governance being a value add to the citizens. So you will see those initiatives coming through, particularly in relation to UAP, which we will table probably in April or in March from next year. But the matter of education, and then it's a commitment from our side that we will actually together. In relation to fruitless and wasteful extension, there were three or four questions from a member to London, member Regan, around some of the issues of us from the CFO, just to deal with some of the cases. Also, I think we would love just to note those three cases, not 3 million, but it's 3,000 rand. We can actually have page 16 that we refer to, but we can give you not a standing, I mean, that 3,000 rand. But we can give you further detail. I mean, the one assurance I want to give the committee is that we take matters of financial governance very serious. Okay, so we do not subscribe to the issue of turning a blind eye to issues around fruitless and waste expenditure, potential fruitless waste expenditure, irregular expenditure, and I mean, unauthorized expenditure is just not even something that we will even entertain. What happens a lot of times in our space, and maybe it's actually good just to provide context, is that given the fact that we provide transversal HR services, we're also responsible to fly, in most cases, people down to Cape Town for interviews, because we do it on behalf of all the departments as a central service. Now, once you start to do that, sometimes it's not entirely within your control. And also given the quantum, you sometimes have one or two people that either miss their flight, you know, pitch up for an interview, etc. But I mean, it's not the norm. So that sometimes is the reason for some of these things happening in our space. But we can provide a little more detail to you, Chair.
Those numbers from page 16, members, the 4,000 is 4,000 rand. The one is not 1 million, it's 1,000. The 22,000 is 3,000. Just for that.
That's it. Okay. Okay. That's it. You can see, I mean, out of the 1.5 billion in budget, okay, I mean, these things are not even, you know, from material, but nevertheless, that is still public funds, and we try our very best to make sure that they don't actually happen. When it happens, we investigate it thoroughly, and obviously all of this is presented to the accounting officer if there's a need to condone it, and if it's not condoned, it's actually approved, you know, from the error from the courtesy expenditure. Then I remember Regan, just in relation to citizen-centric approach, and Celia touched on the point that as a department of Virginia, we realize that the scope of our work is probably more external than internal. So we talk about proper accountability, we talk about proper monitoring and evaluation, it's actually for the entire Western Cape government incorporated. And when you do that, you even go further than just merely, you know, looking at what's happening within the office space. And ultimately, we do all the things that we're doing is actually for the citizens. So we've had our own internal discussions, and we're refocusing our approach to be more external driven, externally focused on the citizens. That's why you see all of those in our documents, even in relation to our people management strategy, our focus is external. So when you see our new APP, this department has been made responsible for the quality around innovation and culture. But culture from an institutional perspective, in fact, even goes further to looking at culture from a community perspective. I talk about culture, talking about now the way, you know, we act and engage as citizens. How do we cooperate? How do we co-create with citizens? How do we put in the private sector in some of these initiatives? Because as governments alone, within the financial constraints, we're not going to be able to do all these issues on our own. And then that obviously also leads to, I think, the digital governance strategy and all the initiatives particularly in relation to the private sector. So the conventional triple P perspective, Mecharina, that we refer to, you know, the conventional arrangements around public, private and partnerships. We don't have any formal public partnership arrangements in terms of the legislation that provides for it. It's mainly the financial institution relation to NPR 16. In the present regulations, but we do work with the private sector because at the end of the day, I mean, it's part of growing, it's part of building the relationship, because as government, you cannot do the things that you want to do entirely on your own. So in relation to innovative initiatives, in relation to the issues around, you know, looking at how we do things differently as a government, we co-learn together with the private sector. There may be just one or two other issues, member Vermeer, on your side. Maybe the level of confusion that it may create. On page 11, the team refers to 94% achievement. That's on average, so that's for period. But in relation to 2018-2019, the achievement for the department sits at 92. So there is a difference between the two, but I take the point that you're making. I mean, I think generally our achievements have been, you know, on par as a department, and we're working hard to make sure that we're not missing all our problems. Some of our problems are not all the time under our control, but I can also indicate to you, if you also look at some of the overachievements, you know, in some areas, and some are also make up for some of the areas we haven't, some of the problems, you know, are fully. Our commitment, however, remains on not setting targets just that are easily achievable, because one can also gain in this process. You put targets there that you know you can easily achieve. So we actually put steps out there and we stretch ourselves to actually go a little bit further. Well, I'm not going to deal with the something that's responded with, and I'm sure when we get to that part B of the report sheet, we will actually deal with that comprehensively. And then maybe just lastly from my side, the issue around M&E. In the review, you will see that in 20, effectively in this year, we're stepping up our game together with the other departments, like the Department of Local Government, the Department of Treasury, to actually push the accountability agenda. And again, you will see some of that stuff coming through. So at the moment, our monitoring evaluation from a frequency perspective, we report to the legislature every quarter on financial and non-financial performance. We report quarterly to the provincial cabinet, and then there's also continuous reporting monthly to the premier in relation to the financials internally of the department and his responsibilities of the executive authority, and then obviously through our quarterly APP process, but more importantly, you know, also to this committee. Because I'm going to ask the speakers to speak with, and then just lastly, Member Doug Moore. We are working on dealing with the issue around the environmental commissioner. Obviously, we need to go to the provincial cabinet and then into Parliament. And we will keep the committee up to speed in relation to how we're dealing with those various processes. So, Vickers, can you just speak to generally the issues around the inequalities and wasteful expenditure? And then Andre, if you can just touch on the issues of broadband, then I think we have responded to all the questions that you raised.
Yes, you definitely do want to. I was actually going to add on the environment evaluation, but
this one.
Thank you. So does that mean, Premier HOD, that there is an intention to continue with the amendment to the Constitution, which would make the appointment discretionary? Is that the position of the Cabinet at the moment?
So that's part of the discussion, meeting one of the that I'm actually going to give you a call to have a meeting with you to have a discussion on that. That was part of the discussion that yesterday, so I was to have a further meeting with the opposition on this, to have a discussion on it. Because it's not only the amendment, there's a couple of issues for the amendment, but one is just alignment, because we haven't aligned since changes in the national constitution. The second point is the technicality around language, which is closer. There's some technicalities, and that will speak to the government.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I want back to front. The first issue, or the last issue that was raised, is that the 18 says that the Auditor General is not handling the irregulars yet on the page 16 will report the number of irregulars. Now, what that simply means is that the Auditor General and the auditors us could not find any irregulars beyond what we self-detect. That's what that means. In other words, when the auditor comes, they can pick up the regulars. In our case, they don't pick up the regulars because we've already picked them. We reported it, we investigated it. So that shows that the internal control environment is reasonably okay in terms of protecting the regulars. So that explains that. Second one is the 16, or page 16 has 18 pages of the regular awaiting condemnation. Just to note, that condemnation is no longer the power of the accounting officer. Since the regular sentence of framework has been issued by National Treasury, roughly May this year, since then we are not allowed to condemn our own regular sentences, so we have investigated the cases. We are submitted to Treasury. Operation Treasury must now empower the capacitate themselves to deal with this loan coming from over. So what is currently in the Treasury is 16 cases of 950,000. Now the question is, we reported 18 cases of 946,000. We say less cases for more money in the Treasury. And the explanation is some of the cases relate to the client, small percentage. That's why the numbers might be different. These cases only relate to the year that we are reporting on. But there's been significant work done there. Investigations are complete. Value for money was achieved. There were no losses that we found in all of those cases that are currently in possession. Then the next one was around the useless and wasteful of roughly 3,000 rand. That relates to 8 cases. Now I can report that 5 of those cases were resolved. It's about 2,600 rand. Subsequently, hearing, and 2 cases were actually recovered. Those 2 cases is about alleged speeding by officials when they rent vehicles in Joburg, and we don't pay for that, of course, when there's fines, which is recovered, that's it. So there's been significant work on those 8 cases. Then, Chair, you have the question on page 14 around budget cut, in fact, budget growth of 3%. After a budget cut for an equitable share of 4%. And the question is, that's not confusing. But the explanation there is that our budget is made up of various allocations. For example, the component is equitable share. There's also a component for conditional grants, earmarked allocations that are definitely funded. So if you look at the makeup of our budget, it is possible for us to take a 4% cut on equitable share. But the broadband rollout increases the broadband allocation, for example, which is separately resourced. So that your percentages, if you look at it, you take a 4% cut, a 7% growth, technically, you could then end up with a 3% budget cut. Even your staffing cost grows at about 7% per annum. So within the budget, that's why we also wrote here in the second line, due to the reduced equitable share allocation. We have the 3% budget cut. So we try to, but I understand that it leads to a difficult problem. I don't take into account the makeup
services.
We have now increased the number to 21, so we have 3 additional that we've done in the new financial year, for the current financial year. And the intention is to, in the next 18 to 24 months, conclude the final or the complete number of municipalities. This is simply because at the moment we are in terms of the entire project in phase two. In phase two, we're ramping up the connectivity speed from the initial 10 gigabits per second to 100 gigabits per second, and some of the corporate sites, in fact, where they be per second. So that requires, to do that, that requires certain technologies, for example, link fiber, which is time consuming, and the majority of the municipalities are in the rural areas where, in fact, our service provider doesn't have existing fiber, for example. And so that is some of the reasons why it would take as long as 24 months to complete the full state of provision.
Chair, I think we have responded to all the questions that have been raised.
Members of questions and answers. Majoko.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Most of the time, the question is raised regarding the organization's sound. Now, all of the organizations as officially referred to is another question. It is yet in the book, page 25. In my book, out of the 26 women that are in the organization, so it's going to be for the long time, none of them are from. And if my calculation is correct, there's only 3 African female organizations. So I didn't hear anything that talks about how are we going to ensure that the transformation within the government and it is in line with the democracy of the group.
Thank you.
Chair, let me respond to that. If I want to refer members to 113 of annual report, in fact, our entire economic target is set target. I think both the members are correct in relation to our structure. I mean, particularly if you look at levels 13, 14, 15, and 16, you know, there are some of those targets that we haven't achieved as yet. Also bear in mind that this is a fairly, you know, from a structural perspective, most of the senior positions, in fact, at that level is actually all full. So it's only really an opportunity, you know, when we actually have a vacancy, you know, on that level. And in fact, I think the last appointment, the last 2 appointments that were made were both people from the executive groups. I mean, they were not applicants, so in the true sense. But we are having or putting initiatives in place to actually do that. In our own management discussions, and I want to also indicate this to the members, we've even taken it a step further. So when we do our performance reviews, when we do our allocations in relation to performance awards, that we are sensitive to matters like that. What we're also doing internally, because it's not just about difficult appointments, sometimes we struggle to find people. We've got a structured process. We also build the capacity of our own internal staff to actually make sure that they actually grow into this position. So it's also about building your own pyramid. And if you go lower down in the staff, Chair, you'll see particularly on level 13 in relation to female appointments, particularly in the CI space, the internal audit space, for example, we have made some progress. So this is something that we are taking serious and we are aware of it. Other than that, we also have an employment equity plan that we are looking at. But it is about capacitating also your own internal staff to actually grow through the institution. It sends a signal to the entire staff I will record. To be a representative of the institution is part of culture. Because you deal with a bigger community of others, so we are aware of it, and we are working on it. That's a commitment that I can give to the community as an entire nation.
Thank you, Member Moraes, from Tudor. City Singh is the last today.
I will assure you, sir, it's not a habit, it's a traffic problem.
Okay.
I would just like to ask on page 15. I know I have been reasonably good at math. So when you talk about Centre for E-Innovation and share an overspending of underspending of 50,000, then I encountered how you got to that figure. How can 99,000 be deducted from 967,000 to 50,000? Where's the problem there? That's in the one point. And then I just noticed that in the report of the accounting officer, he vacillates between citizens, residents, and people. Is there a difference here? You sometimes refer that you want to give all residents certain rights, then you again say citizens. Now, residents is not a citizen. There's a big difference between a citizen of a country and just a resident of space there. I'd like to explain why you sometimes refer to citizens and sometimes you refer to residents. And then I would like to know, when you say that you were underfunded in terms of the equity principle, did you take into account your understanding of the different departments? Any understanding that would sort of actually affect me? Because when you say that I didn't get enough money, but that which you did get is didn't even spend, then you would have been underfunded. Well, but I'd like you to explain that aspect of it. Did you take it into account? And the last point I would like to say is the department as a whole also looking not only at creating jobs, and because you're doing a good job of it, when I read through this report, it was quite impressive, but I don't see anything about the policy in terms of poverty relief or in education. Do you concentrate on poverty? You're the big factory in the worst effect. And there's nobody here that is responsible for policy on poverty and education. And with all the experts here, and I do not question your ability, I just question your focus. That is all I would like to do.
Thank you, Member Valen.
Okay, let me respond. Just one or two things. I mean, Member Valen, I mean, when you talk about citizens earlier, you talk about, I mean, you're a citizen of South Africa, but you talk about letting service to people. That's it. I mean, we don't, if somebody gets to a service point, ask the person whether you're a citizen of this province or whether you're a citizen of another province, because you've got your citizen of South Africa. So we talk about delivering services to the people that actually require those services to be delivered. So whether you're hospitals, at schools, or just part of the general public, in the in the province. So that word is kind of conversely used. Then on the equitable share funding or the underfunding part, there is a general norm that departments are funded, so you have a baseline budget and then your budget generally grows with inflation, of salaries. So at least make sure that you are at the expenditure levels of next year, you take off inflation, it's more or less aligned to what you perceive this year, so that in real terms, that you don't go back. The point that you're making, if you look at our budget, in real terms, our budget did not keep track with inflation. So, effectively, if you didn't become more efficient, you would not able to deliver the same level of service, quantum of service, this year as we delivered in the previous year. That was part of the reason why we said that also placed an additional stress on our budget, in addition to obviously dealing with issues around exchange rate fluctuations. And we were caught on the negative side of that, given the fact that the RAND actually depreciated sort of much stronger than, you know, the levels of inflation in the budget. So that is why we've made that point. So that the reader of annual report can actually understand, you know, why we're saying that our budget is under pressure. And then, Chair, I must say on page 15, and then we will give you a separate edit, the number of the final appropriation for 2018-19 for Centre of Innovation should be 998338, and not 9938. So that's fine. If you do the math, there is an underspending of 15 million, but the final appropriation should be 998338. And I understand that's a critical error, and we will
Thank you, members. We're now going to continue from page number 30 to page 84. Page number 30 to page 84. Each member will also now have maximum 10 minutes, including follow-up questions. On page 30 to 84, members have 10 minutes, including the follow-up. So if you have 7 minutes of questions, 3 minutes of follow-up, 5 minutes of questions, 5 minutes of follow-up. And I'm going to save this time around, members, so let's speak to the time. Page 30 to page 84, under the performance information. Senior member Moray will speak now, or you're in the third back of the chair.
Sir, I was waiting for the leader of opposition to lead the fight. So I was actually prepared to start off, and I will leave it to you. I'll follow up later.
Thank you. And I'll start, and then I'll get in the back. I'm very looking to the previous big hits from the end. Okay, just in regard to the next phase, page 51. There's references from page 51 to very strained human resource capacity in the strategic management and the three directions of the information as to what's going on there. Then
page 56, 57, and it's I think contained across the board in reference to the please call me number, you know, across a number of platforms. And it's also mentioned that there are monthly reports about the various platforms that citizens use to contact the government. I'm just very interested to know, are there any statistics as to how extensively the police calling number is used, if we have some information drawn from the monthly reports on how people actually access the provincial government, particularly the police calling number. And then, on page 44, the chief directorate organizations that have 88 projects. From 60 were completed in the financial year. I don't think we need a verbal response, but could we just note, Chair, if you'd like a list of those projects, and then of the 28 remaining, has there been any progress in this current financial year in terms of those projects that the Chief Director was asked to assist with? Okay, and then on page 49, the financial management sub-program, it's noted that there was an underspending on compensation of employees. Could you just have a little bit more information as to the contribution factors which led to that situation? And then, on page 52, there's reference to the unit that gets involved in facilitating mediation conflict situations. There's just particular reference to the Hamburg Peace Accord and the court order which resulted from that peace accord some years ago. Could we just have an update as to whether those agreements report itself, what is the current status, and are there any other conflict situations which this particular unit is looking at the moment, potential conflict situations which they would want to in a year under review. And then there's reference in Program 2, Provincial Strategic Management Plan, partnerships and strategic engagements, and at some level there's reference to the relationship with the Council for Higher Education. I would just like to ask, in the year under review, how many meetings were actually held with the Council for Higher Education and the different universities in the province? And those particular, the also under review for strategic management, the staff exit situation, maybe that's going to overall question around the challenges in that unit. Then on page 65, once again, it seems that a lot of the underspend that we see in this annual report has to do with issues of the high turnover rate. I would like to ask that question and link it to the reference in under people management to page 111, where it says there that of the total, that 56% of the total resignation which happened, that there was no reason provided. Could we have some indication as to why, is this just because of a refusal of those leaving? Do we have any speculation as to why people are not providing things? So I think it is a concern, the high turnover rate in the Department of the Premier. And it's very disconcerting if the vast majority of those leaving are not getting SOPs. That's a concern. And then on page 63, there was a reference to the fact that
Yes, thank you, Jim. I'm really interested to know about your provincial training and empowerment program. I spoke to quite a lot of people here, and you know, I will be busy the whole day if I just speak with all of them. They work here. Some of them say I've been here 20 years, still in the same job. Others say I've been here 15 years, with a lot of Michelle Falls. And I've got four stars that here I've been to, so I think I've promised me. En hulle sê dat kan nie mense kry om my kostes te vul nie, maar wat het jy gedoen om my Abba beginsel toe te pas? Hier wat nou, breng af echte kinders wat hier sit, weet wat Abba is. Jy draai die kind op jou rug, maar die kind kan nog nie groot nie. Maar die kind sien al wat die maag moet, en so leer die kind, en hoor wat die maag gaat aan die kind, en so leer die kind, te ons moet hy Abba beginsel toe, toepas. Hier is een directeur, een leiders, deputy director, een assistant director. Hulle moet gaan afhalen op je hond. So as hy wegvallen gaat, hulle is die job voor. Is dat zo'n strategie? Of hulle al die buitenkant mensen soek, en die mensen wat die getrouw aan die, parlement van werken van 10, 15, 20 jaar, hy brein is waar hy is, hy kom nergens. Ek wil nie hoekom jylle te doen, en waarom jylle daar aan treed, dan wil ek tweedens vraag. Ek het ook gesien dat hierdie boek wat jylle het gesê, hier luie boek, is net in Engels. Hoekom is Afrikaans heel geen ambtelike taal in die Weskaap nie? Sommige van die woorde moet ek drie tietje in die vat, om te weet wat sê hulle. Nou wil ek dit een punt daarvan maak, jylle moet Afrikaans respecteer, in parlement, of wat onmoedig het. Nie vir my nie, toe ons ek 21 en jylle gaan ontlameer word. So, Amerikaans, wil ek ook weet, ek was soos lindig van meneer, nie die hele wat nie sê, ons gaan ons gaan, ons het met onderzoek instel. En hier sê lindig van mense, arme mense, hulle kom lindig, na die wat die groot parlementariër vir hulle sê. En die Afrikaans sprekende mense, gewone mense, waar het graad 6 in die school het, maar hy is kiezer, al het heel graad 6. Maar hy praat net Engels, die manne aan die school het gemaakt. En hy moet dan weet dit, dit is wat ek heb gesê.
Maar hy kan het graag
Ja, ja, ek weet, jy gaat het echt graag voor jou die zaak. Maar, die vraag wat ek voor vraag is, waarom word Afrikaans afgeskeep as jy bevoorrechtings maak aan die Jankfabriek in een provincie waar die groot mense met Afrikaans praat? En dan moet ek weet, ja, die papatieres of julle het eerst gaan adverteer na binnen toe of adverteer julle al die papatieres na buitenkant toe en nie na binnen toe, binnen is huis toe. Dank u.
Thank you,
Member Regan. Thank you, Chairperson. I am Member Lakeswell, and thank you to Mr. Holland for taking the time. Taking Mr. Holland to the Republic Council of Africa. So thank you for that, sir. What I want to ask you to say is this regarding the 70, and based on the document that is based on page 35, I understand that all the centers would have been genetic accessibility. Would that be 100% correct as we are sitting here? And if there is any further planning to not only renovate or upskill the centers to make it more, I don't want to say user friendly, but to make it more popular in the sense where people, where these numbers would actually go much higher. But I do want to commend the department for this amazing number check. That's the one question. One second, and to respond to the faith project, whether there is, which is on page 64, and that you have to return to the other Dartmoor's question, if there's any regarding the teacher strategy, what is the appetite from corporate and from other potential partners in order to increase the current list of potential partnerships so that those
just a question on my side. If you look at page 49, 55, 65, and 104, now one can understand people who buy, people move up, people get promoted, one can understand the concept. But if I look at the average number of days for improvement, 104 days to appoint somebody, is there no way, whichever mechanism is used, that you can decrease the longevity it takes to improve somebody? Whether you have a standard database, say for example, 6 months ago you had 33,000 people apply and you keep them on a database. So when is the new post available? Start the first source in that file of information before you start reapplying. So it doesn't take 104 days to appoint somebody. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think the question that I want to talk to you is the one of HR culture within the organization. And I mean, obviously you are dealing with a review here, and the realities come out in the review, but it's also a question about how people find opportunity within the organization. 84,000 people work in this government, and obviously the people space within this department doesn't necessarily offer all of those with HR within health and HR within education or not. But of course we set the policy, we set the strategy, and I mean that is definitely something that I really want to focus on, is the culture of an organization. And so I mean the first, and some of these are not easy when you put them in place, so you would know that even the head of the department can't just be automatically renewed. And in a way that puts a disruptive or creates a disruptive environment. But for me, it's about continuing to make sure that people are on their toes. And of course, if you're an incumbent, surely you've got a massive advantage over anybody else applying. But it also is a signal to the organization. And I mean, you've got to start at the top. But it should be that signal across the organization that says, in actual fact, you should be able to improve yourself so that you can find a pathway to whichever position that you want to aspire to. I will never forget one of the stories that helped me in thinking that we've got to move towards much more culture focus, the culture of the organization, focus inwards on your team. I always say that Richard Branson always says, look after yourself and look after the customers. You know, we've got to make sure that we have that culture within our organization, that we have opportunity. And it wasn't in this organization, it was actually in the Reserve Bank where a position was filled. And the director position in the Reserve Bank, and one of the Reserve Bank governors that I was talking to was saying that there was a lot of unhappiness in the passageways because it was an outsider that got the position and no one looked in. And he said he called everybody together and said, I understand that there's unhappiness that an outside person got this job and you thought that you were on the way to. One question, who in this organization has been preparing for that job, studying for that job, getting themselves ready for that job? And no one put their hand. Now we need to make sure that we change that, that we don't have that same similar kind of experience, that people within the organization can actually be preparing themselves. That's the way of the world today. In corporates and organizations, constant learning and constant preparing. So that's exactly what we need to address too, and that falls under that banner of culture within our organization. And I really am very, very curious about how we enable that environment. So you know that there is opportunity within, but we've also got to reclaim your part in moving toward that opportunity, and I think that comes through in a number of questions that were asked today. Maybe I'll also just the Akbar Marae, the Ibukwa, and Dari and Kaipasta for the book. We shall see now at the Afrikaans, and these also versions of this publication are available on request in a people's place. You can draw in this or the legal of the current.
And also request to the creator.
Just in relation to the question I'm going to ask the respective
to most of the stuff. So last year we did respond to the issues in program 2. In fact, all the issues there were raised by member Doug Wall. And then I'm going to ask Andre, maybe if you could just touch on this issue around these district peace program. If we don't have it here, then Chair, we will supply that in the same way that we will also supply the other information also that the member of government has actually asked in relation to the number of posts that's been concluded in 1890. And we can actually give you that information if we don't have it here. So maybe Michael, if you can respond to all the HR issues. And then also, maybe if you want to touch on, connect to what the previous said, staff capacity volume, staff capacitation, how do we prepare our staff for the next level? And then, Hilton, maybe just talk about the excess of center, and also Michael, because we just talked about the trade project. And then lastly, Chair, on the issues around the presentation unit, the piece of work, all the software that goes there.
Thank you. I'll start with the question that Ms. Dalmo mentioned on page 31 with reference to the situation with the staff being unrest and in mental capacity. And I think what has happened over the last few years is particularly in terms of fiscal constraints, it's been an approach adopted to have the upper limit on the compensation of employees. And this has obviously meant that when vacancies arise, you need to go through a process to basically request that vacancy be filled. And I don't have the exact vacancy rate now, but I think the DG has mentioned that can be provided. But essentially what the situation is that particularly at the senior manager level, and you can see it on the organogram that's provided on page 25, there are some key vacancies with particularly in the policy and strategy unit and also within the Chief Director of National Guardian Program with the two acting directors that are there. And also what has happened over the while is that with an expanding mandate, particularly within the strategic management information unit, there's also been a reliance on using some contract staff, and so that is also some of the constraints. But what I can say is that the branch is currently undergoing a functional optimization review, so we are undergoing a branch realignment exercise to basically look at how we can best restructure or relook at some of the roles to basically optimize delivery on the key areas that we will be taking forward over the next period. So that is a process that is currently underway and it is on our department's organizational design plan. With regards to the issue of checks, I can just quickly respond. So the interaction with the Cape Higher Education Consortium is through the CHEC Western Government Joint Task Team. And that joint task team basically consists of representatives from CHEC and each higher education institution, as well as representatives from the Department of the Senior and given the previous approach to the provincial strategic plan, representatives from each one of the key areas of the provincial strategic goals. The meetings generally take place every 6 weeks, so for the previous financial year, in 1819, there were 8 meetings that were held with the actual joint task team. I mean, the data can be provided if necessary, but also just to say that there are a number of other engagements also with the CHEC. So for example, also in August 2018, the CHEC representatives also offered the opportunity to engage with our provincial top management. That has become something that's done on an annual basis. And then there are also some other engagements with some of the department leaders who have identified in the joint task team to take forward. But as I said, the actual joint task team meeting is going to be for the 2019 financial year. Then with regard to the other matters, I think that is very particularly hunger and the unit noble to God's congregation. I'm going to ask Mr. Lala, who is our chief director for international relations and charity program and is quite involved in this strategy, to a quick update on hunger and then also just to touch on any other areas that we are currently working on.
Thank you, Chef. Around Krypta, around Hunger, we have bi-monthly engagements with all the stakeholders involved. The engagements are intended to monitor the process that I expressed in terms of the Peace Accord. There are two levels of meetings. One is the working committee, and all the stakeholders are involved. I share that structure. And there is a coordinating forum, coordinating structure, which is led at a political level between the premier and the executive mayor. So all we are on par in terms of deliverance on the projects, and we're monitoring that in terms of those engagements, as I said, once every 2 months there's a meeting here in the provincial government. What we are, the current situation in terms of conflicts that we are now currently dealing with anger, is that there is a grouping that has organized itself to challenge the legitimacy of the PMF. PMF is the Peace and Moderation, Peace and Mediation Forum, which is a community structure elected by the people of anger in terms of the accord. So they are challenging that, and we are busy now trying to facilitate peace between the two groupings, because they are both in anger. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
And one exceptional follow-up organization for us on the Facebook time.
On the messaging?
Yeah, it's basically around, I don't know if Mr. Lovett's answer was then also indicating that besides Hamburg there are not any other current issues. Is that the response that basically just Hamburg, where there are no other communities or issues that the Department of the Premier is involved in mediating in Morocco?
Thanks, Chef. I was also responding in terms of Hamburg. There are also other ad hoc issues. One is a corresponding issue around elections. The Department of the Premier was involved in the communication. Just in the recent past, there has been cases about the threat around the conflict between the locals and foreign nationals in different areas, like the East, Samoa Machel, Nyanga, Danun areas. The Department of the Premier has been involved, but those are the matters. The anger one is an ongoing one, but those have been dealt with.
Thank you.
Very clarified that I think the Premier would be aware that there's also been correspondence directed to his office around another issue in Half Bay, and that relates to a whole number of property owners living in proximity to the design year, who are prepared to basically negotiate making availing those properties which would be available to assist with meeting the housing need, and that there was a process where it was almost concluded that those properties would be actually disposed of, and that the whole process seems to have stopped, which appears to be creating quite a difficult situation in the area, which could potentially unlock further land for the human settlement. So is that an issue that the Premier would consider getting this unit and mediation involved to unlock that problem? Or how does the Department of the Premier see that issue? Is it in their view just something that the city needs to do, or is the province prepared to be involved in that issue?
Thank you. I am fully aware of it. It was an issue that started quite a while ago with the previous plan considering Cape Town. It is a city matter. What I do know of the issue is that two things. One is that not all
Fraser Clark comes in and enter into negotiations to buy out pieces of land where there's islands in the middle where people are not interested in selling. So that's the one issue that seems to come up, or that I'm aware of. And the one, and the second one was pricing. And there seems to be an issue around pricing. Values of the property than market values, etc. But I am aware of it, although I haven't been asked to be involved in any mediation stuff. I know that it is an issue that has been dealt with at the city level.
No, Mare, and then we're going to continue with the answers.
Thank you so much, Jim. The point is, there's a, this specific case that gentleman just mentioned. The flying away with is actually the city of Cape Town. But they have appointed a valuator to value the property which is now occupied by informal settlements. The court order said that when they value the property to compensate the people whose land it is, they must not take into account what is now there. In other words, devalue because people squat on the land. The city of Cape Town then went there and appointed the evaluator. When the evaluator gave the value, they fired the evaluator and they said, no, they're going to pay that money. They now appeal. So now I have correspondence from people. They came to see me, the colored lady, she's over 80 years old. She says, please ask the premier to intervene, but I believe the premier has appealed the case of validity. I would like to know whether this thing is going to be settled so that justice is seen to be done. So is it a matter of principle or is it a matter of finance? Because this lady just wants the money for the land, her land, the province allowed and the city allowed people to squat on the land. And now they can't get rid of the squatters, and the court said, they must buy the land from the individuals, not taking into account the structure that is on the land now. But the city of Cape Town wants that to be taken into account against the court order. I would just like, and I know Alfred is a businessman with a smart business brain. Everybody says it. No matter if their mind is theirs. But what I want to say is, will the premier be prepared to act as mediator to try and resolve the political issue, or is he going to say it is not my business?
The man, I need a bit more clarity. Which political issue?
I know, that's what I was wanting to hear. What's that? Somebody in parliament?
There's
so many political issues.
No, there's only one political issue, the land, the farmland, where they have squatters on,
yes,
which is trying to get the people off the land. And they cannot get the people off the land. And I'm offering to your office full details, but your secretary replied, this is now subjugated, we are appealing, so you're not going to get involved. Maybe the secretary didn't enforce. But
you're talking about the economy. Which one? Who's that they're talking about?
I don't know. But if the premier allow me, when I get back to my office, I'll be doing full detail. I know that he will do his best to try and settle it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Member Mariette. Did you ask me to answer the question?
Sure, we will have to sit with some of the other sponsors on the entities on Monday. That is the list of your matters.
Around the realization of specifically the fiscal number, but I think we provide visual text on all of the exits for the various courts into online and all that. So that should be
The 2 points that I need to discuss is proven this too, because there will be a great minimum speed for the other people taking this too. And then to remember again, then to get access, yes, all get access here is quite possible for wheelchair residents and users. The One in the front post, we have our e-changer on the measuring level, but at the bottom we do have two disks, or a disk with staple patches. And we also cater for visiting the citizens or users who are coming to see us.
Yes. Michael, just in relation to the recruitment days, there was an issue around the culture stuff and the number of questions people that we're going to send that through to the committee. And then there was an issue around the budgets on page 44.
Thank you, Chair, members. With regard to the 8-8 project, yes, there are a number that are outstanding. And the nature of these is the service that we provide to departments. So the project would, for example, include an organizational redesign in the department or a culture intervention or even improvement in the business process. So because we deal with it, we will then, as part of the demand plan that we have with departments and respond to it and deal with it. In many cases, because some of these projects are multi-year projects, so they don't sort of start and end in a financial year, they will go forward. But we will provide the details to the committee and as we indicated, our response in terms of the 1,442 posts that were advertised, but the feedback that was again, that is transversal, that's all the level departments that we manage for. In terms of the turnover rate that the member raised, one thing to take into account is it's always an issue because people have a choice to indicate what is their reason for leaving. It's something that we're looking to try and see how we can improve it because on the one hand, you know, you can say it's anonymous, but as soon as you say where you're leaving from, people will know who you are. So I think it's one of those particular issues that we have and we can only encourage our employees to indicate to us because we need that information as well in order to respond to it. Especially if it was a negative reason that the person is leaving for, we'd like to know that particular situation so that we can respond to it. Just generally, in terms of the turnover rate, for members to note that in terms of the 150 people that did leave them, we are also advised to report those whose contract has expired, so they have left, 62 people left, simply because their contract expired and not because they resigned, etc. So the turnover rate member is better than it comes down to about 8.4% than what it is if you take away all the contract expiring ones. But nonetheless, we continue to look at that. But generally, in terms of the industry standards, given where we are now with the new world, with higher levels of staff mobility as people move from job to job. Then with regard to the pay project, there were two questions. One is, the only that I can recall, remember, is the interest was indicated was in Peterborough municipality, because we had gone to one of the municipality forums where all the educators, democracy people gather, and they were very keen on it, but the problem is a lot of municipalities cannot afford it. So we can provide support in terms of saying, here's the learning materials, we can do the classes for them to train, the training decision, but the actual payment of stipend, I think that is something. So today there's only municipal day that actually runs it as a mayor project. And then also with regard to the pay project, the exit strategy, we continue to engage. We, for example, have an agreement with RMB, so they have our database because RMB is an important portal into the private sector, so they have this massive database and our people slot into it. In fact, RMB will also assist us to do some of the life skills training prior to when the young people, especially those in the metro, are leaving, for example, CV writing, etc. So there are. We also make our database available through our Department of Economic Development to business because they have also reached into corporate. So for example, a big sort of corporate like Sun or Mutual, they have access to our database. The issue is around what are the skills we are giving our young people to make them attractive to the corporate as well, given that they're working in the public sector. So that's something that we have to look at going forward as well. And then also we encourage our young people also to do study further, to make available our bursaries, etc., or even applying for posts for those who want to study. So that is in broad our strategy in that particular regard. Then your question around the recruitment time, yes, it is such. We try and monitor the process as well. What we found is the sort of generally the biggest time delay if you look at a recruitment process he's the shortest route. You know, once we receive the asset closes, we send the longest to the line manager, and then sometimes literally just to sheer volumes, numbers of people that apply for a post, and they have to work through that. So that is our longest period. What we do is we send out the list to the manager. So as soon as you are reaching, we work on, say, you need X number of days in your shortlist. As soon as it closes, gets that, it will send a letter to the manager. If still nothing, we will have escalated to the HD. In that particular post, they're taking too long to get the shortlist. Because typically, once you get the shortlist done, you get the interview, then that period is relatively quick. Because then to a lot of things, we can also manage it, because my team that can actually manage interviews, nomination process, and actual appointments. So that is something that we are looking at. We have a situation also, Jay, where our recruitment policy also allows for who. In other words, it's typical your certain types of posts which are generally assigned. Like, for example, a PA post, there's a pool, so the people can actually, it's valid for 6 months. So if you leave, you can go into that pool and use that instead of actually going through that. So that is also available, and we also encourage, as soon as there's a vacancy coming to us, we will advise the line manager and say, there is a pool to be able to go into that. And if you see them for the line manager, so there are ways of trying to reduce that time in terms of the vacancy. There was also questions raised around training and empowerment, and we agree that as you also indicated, we want to grow our center. And that is why we also noticed in the report there were 1,450 training opportunities offered and attended by our staff. And part of that empowerment, every staff member, when they are doing their performance agreement, there's a section on their personal development plan where they indicate what training they need, and that has been confirmed with their manager. So sometimes when you can both agree this is the training or not, because some people want to train in a particular area, and that's not the organization one. So we look at that. We also look at the promotions. If we look at the promotions, there's also TP promotions, that was internal appointments that were made. So there is internal movement. So to say. We also then have a people plan we develop to ensure that we can help managers determine where they're going to need to recruit. In other words, identify areas up front, and then also then make sure that the people in the levels just below them are in fact having the necessary qualifications, etc. So that when it does come up, they can actually shoot for that particular course.
I think
it's
for that. Just finally, Richard, that was the last question to you. If you have any questions, just on financial management, which are already in that position. Especially for
that. Well, Chair, just to note that that money now is just in relation of two things. One is fixed, so we didn't lose financial people. So a couple of months is something about that for positive. The other one is that the financial management, especially supply chain, is becoming increasingly specialist. And as our resources are getting less, we also become very strict as to the kind of capacity that we want to do. So our interviews become much more stringent, and so there's no time for other people in those units. We actually have to come in more than talk here at the specific skills level. So we do go out a few times, often a month, to get the right kind, and that also impacts.
When someone leaves, do they just fill in the form or do you actually have an exit interview?
The exit interview, we ask if you want to speak about taking an exit interview. They can fill in the form, but we also offer them an opportunity to actually have an exit interview with them and sit down. So again, participation in the interview was involved.
Chair, I'm just trying to find what is the thinking in regard to being able to answer that question. The 55% part where you actually don't know why people are leaving, which I think is a concern. So in other words, people don't have to participate in a text interview if they don't want to. But do they at least have to fill in a form? They don't actually, it's not, nothing is compulsory.
they will indicate, you know,
they can fill in
or say personal.
Okay.
So they ask, they do fill in the form, but the choice they take is personal, reasonable, or whatever. So,
but the document will need to take a break now. Thank you very much. Members, we will take a short break. We need to be back here at 10:15. 15 minutes, if the bell will ring. 15 minutes, 10:15. If you don't hear the bell, be here at 10:15, please. Thank you. Thank you.
tell you that clock is right.
Yes, precisely. I think, yeah, so usually when you're taking photos of things, you just have to take a photo of the usually if there is a problem, then the chairperson will say something.
Sure. Respect that.
Yeah. Is that in case there was some kind of big issue that pops out, because it's now like it's because it's Wendy's first annual report.
Right.
So I figured maybe if you see there's a difference between, you know, how he manages the department compared to, you know, Zillow, maybe.
Yeah, I thought there might be something about Zillow.
Pretty much a turmoil. Tomorrow is community safety, which I think is going to be a lot more interesting.
Yeah, but tomorrow that's important for me because I will see.
I'm trying to follow up now. Cameron had a statement that he sent, I think, on Tuesday about the Kunlodi development in the private school.
I'm going to ask for a query on the health department.
Thank you.
previous year conference.
Okay, members, we're going to start. We have a forum and a premium. That's the most important part. We reconvene. convene the standing committee of the Premier and Constitutional Matters. I'm going to give you one of the extra reasons here. Then they should have the
question.
Members, we get to now.
Tell me about the vacancies here.
Yeah, we're going to start from page 104 to page 151. Page 104 to page 151.
Based
but in fact in this department, as far as I'm aware, it's the only department that has been a regression. So I wanted to ask, would the barometer cover the education and health departments as well? And have any concerns been raised in the year under review of that particular department?
It says all your questions from page 104 to 151. Okay, no more, right?
No, sir, I skipped this one.
Okay. And the other?
Thank you, Jefferson. I have one question that flows from 91, but I will rather leave that out. And upon 109, with regard to the job evaluation, and I can see how that is adding value to the government, but do the department have an ideal percentage of amount of jobs that actually needs to be evaluated? I see based on 109, out of the percentage of active posts, there was 14 that was evaluated, which amounts to 1.4. Whether there is an ideal amount, if that's a 10%, etc., and to keep improving that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Actually,
you
see?
Chair, I'm going to ask Mr. Chumat to respond. Obviously, noting that there is a front part of the document in relation to page 105. Relates obviously to the activities of the Department of Penal Law One. And then if you look at the standard layout of all the annual reports, similar kind of analysis you should be able to find that in every department. And then maybe if you could just respond to this matter and we also the fact that you can see from what is happening. And then I'll maybe just ask on the job regulation under if you can also respond to that.
on the matter of the barometer factor fishing up, is unfortunately not. So the barometer factor was introduced by the CSC, by our chief director, in particular in legal management, for the 11 departments, including the Department of Trade, that we serve. We have access to certain phenomena other data, and we have created a specific business intelligence tool. Through which we are able to mine the data from PEPFAR and then apply certain methodologies and then generate reports for TV. Now, unfortunately, this week we do not access at the moment, so we don't access the SAR and other data for education and health, so therefore we don't develop these factors. We have, however, a people management forum that we have established for quite a number of years, where the senior HR persons for health and education join us in matters of common interest and of the variety of data sources. I think the issue, you know, given that that's the case, and that's, for instance, the barometer which you confirmed now doesn't necessarily apply because they have their own capacity to do that, we could develop a situation where possibly information which is impacting on service delivery issues in those two critical departments escapes the broader attention of the Department of Premier. And I'm not suggesting that the fact that there's literally been a regression in voluntary representativity in that department is the only factor that is contributing. If we look at the last 2 years, you've had at the Auditor General level, the Education Department slipping. You've had matric results slipping. You've had the issue of literacy and numeracy actually slipping and pass rates for grade 9 and 10. And the talk that one gets is kind of an unhappiness at a management level around issues of management style and leadership. So I welcome the commitment, you know, from the HOE to look into this issue. But I also just want to ask the Premier whether he has any views whether the very unusual decline in the number of senior Black African managers by a total of 12 over the last 5 or 6 years, and there's literally only 2 left now, whether he has a view on whether that could be contributing to, you know, some of the performance issues and, you know, sort of, let's call it a staff motivation and motivation levels. I mean, has he picked that up, or is it something that he's not aware of? But it is a concern. As I said, I want to attribute just to issues of senior management representability, but I'm concerned that it could be one issue, plus an overall people management approach in that department.
Can I respond to that? It was happening that the action of the Premier wasn't previously under review. Premier was the MECs and other departments. And in the Department of Health and Education, there were MECs. So perhaps their committees are sitting the next 2 days. You can sit in on those committees and ask those ministers directly what has happened and what is the impact on them. So I would like to ask a question on page 127. Under the total number of grievances, was someone outstanding or not?
Okay.
Sorry, the grievances from there.
Question is related to the ideal number. Not the evaluation form was driven by discussion that we need to expect. For example, the made the subject of the big required that all folks be child evaluated maybe 5 years, maybe 6 months. And the creation of jobs for folks through organizational design and new folks in this must be subject to job evaluation. There are times when there is a significant movement or change in the mandate of the department or the community in the department, which leads to the possible change or significant change in the job description in such a department. Obviously, that makes a big evaluation. So it is often either described or it is related to significant changes in either the mandate or the strategy. Policy environment, in particular department, impact on the workload, the type of work, and all. And so it's difficult to say that it should be an idea done.
Thank you. Just a mild question on page 127, table 3, chart 4. A number of grievances not resolved is X. And then below that it says grievances not resolved is those cases where the outcome is not in favor of the agreement. Now that might be a standard DPSA note, but how do one know if these grievances are really not resolved, or if they are resolved, but not in favor? So there's some clarity there. And then on page 128, salary training and development opportunities. If you look at professional salary bands 9 and 12, and technicians 6 to 8, and clerks 3 to 5, but then you find in the elementary occupations, 1 to 2, not presumably we're talking about gardeners, cleaners, general workers, there seems there's much less training opportunities available. So it seems like the lower down the pile you are, the lower the opportunities are for you. If you are a lawyer, there seems to be, just take one, seems to be, there's opportunity for master's degree, an MBA, a postgraduate, but if you are a gardener or a cleaner or a clerk, there's no training opportunity available. So how do one then try and push these individuals up? What training and opportunities can be available for these individuals that are scared? Thank you.
Chairman, on the table 3.12.4, I'm going to ask Dr. Chris to give you the details on the Case 9 case, but more particularly with the 8 divisions have been resolved in the particular year, and whether, and actually also what the outcomes, because I mean, I fully agree with you, the fact that the divisions, that the outcome goes against the person that's agreed doesn't necessarily mean that the divisions is not resolved. So, I mean, I take your point on that one. And then maybe Michael, you can also add on this thing, and I think it's a valid point you're making on Chair. It's actually also about thinking, and we spoke about building your own kind of timber and your own capacity, is how do we actually, you know, try and move people out of your salary bands 1 to 2? I think even when we were there, made the point that, you know, it's about creating opportunities. And in a lot of the cases, it's to create the opportunities through training and skills development process to actually build the capacity. And you can see this chart, there's about 18 people in that range, and it's effectively that occupation that we just mentioned. And it's something that I think us as a department need to focus on. So it's about going into each one's performance agreement and then looking at the specific training and development opportunities outside also of the
just the last question on page 130. When we look at all the consultants one has used and from CSGN's own technical expertise for evaluation reviews, is there a process where these experiences that are brought in on a 6 month, 12 month basis transferred over to somebody else so that next year, for example, we don't hire one of these consultants?
Chair, from a strategic perspective, definitely yes. You see, particularly within Program 2, I mean, there's a lot of consultants that specifically will be meeting this review. I mean, we're not even putting our development of our next strategic term plan, the 2019 PhD party consultant, doing it exclusively internally at the moment, given the capacity that's involved. And then also in relation to some of our own research programs that actually runs across the various departments, as far as possible to deal with that also internally. And then some of the other consultants obviously related to stuff where this is practically either not possible or you don't want to create that additional capacity for shorter assignments for particular projects. But as far as possible, even as part of the contractual arrangement, there is an element of capacity volume. But at the end of the day, you've got your full staff complement, you should be able to do most of your stuff internally within, within your work. What you also see, Chair, is over time, the number of consultants that we're using for this kind of short-term assignments is actually being reduced. It's also aligned to the personal strategy that is driven by the province in relation to this, and also coupled to our own internal capacity building strategy that we're exploring within the department.
Thank you, Prima and your team. And in terms of the annual report process, not it member of my you work me today.
I'm just very interested to know how much of the advice consultants give you do you consider worth taking further or accepting? Because a lot of people consult me and I would like you to tell me what percentage of the consultation support you get you think is worthwhile taking forward that is just gathered up on the shelves?
In fact, I believe if you appoint somebody or whether it's consultant or whatever it is, you need to get value, you know, from it. So there's a couple of cases that we can actually identify and demonstrate that we've used some of the advice. For example, we've used the former development group to assist us with the evaluation on the proposal for our personal management system. We've taken some of the advice into the development of the new PSP, the development of the new PDMS system as an example. If you don't use that advice, then somebody can also argue that it's sometimes the consultants do give you advice that you may not necessarily agree to. So you need to use your professional judgment in that case. And sometimes it's also good to get somebody to evaluate some of your problems that you can see, you know, from an external perspective, whether you're actually doing what you're supposed to be doing. I mean, the pure definition of consultant is somebody that comes in to assist you, to consult and to give you advice.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that as the recipient of advice, you always have to take the advice from the consultant. You need to use your professional judgment as a senior public servant and public information. But in most of the cases, we can assure you that for the purposes of the interview consultants, we take the proposals on board. It's about improving your own internal processes in relation to the job that you're doing.
Thank you. You want to say something?
I've got a question hanging in the middle of the from Member Dugmore, and I noticed that you dealt with it quite decisively, but you know, he did ask me the question, and I wanted to say to him that obviously you're correct, Chair, that you know, I think the detail that he's looking for specifically around the representativity at the management level in education, because we asked him that standing committee. But, and he asked me whether I picked it up or not, and I haven't specifically picked it up, but I do know that the things that are really affecting our education department are crime, high numbers putting pressure on our system, and right now it's the budget. We have thousands of learners looking for opportunity coming to this province and coming to Gauteng. They're coming from other provinces where there's failure, and it is putting huge pressure on the system. I mean, right now, looking forward, pressure is getting up. Whether it's educational health, and I think I link that to not only to numbers and to the real strain that we've put on the budget system, because we just are not bringing in the tax at the national level to be divided amongst the provinces. And then the whole safety issue. I mean, there are so many schools that are under such pressure because of safety issues. And that's why, I mean, that's why safety becomes such an important part of this government, because we need to create an environment that can actually change. But I'll just take a ball of the head and we'll just be able to do my own.
Thank you. And with that one, I don't know if there's a conversation.
I was not opening the conversation, just appreciating the fact that the Premier answered and gave a perspective. I just think that those, I would agree that those are critical issues, but when you have a situation which is what we are picking up and talking openly here, where there's lack of cohesion and tensions in the senior management because of, say, one of the factors being the crime representativity dramatic decline, that can be a contributing factor in terms of management cohesion to deal with all of those problems that you're dealing with. I just want to raise that to give you a really interesting question.
Thank you, Member Dugmore. I'm now going to open up the opportunity for the public. This meeting was advertised. So we open up to members of the public, introduce yourself, and then your questions. Thank you. Do we have members of the public in?
Yeah.
Okay, introduce yourself, sir, and then...
Just me?
Okay, yeah.
No, bueno.
Good morning. I'm Mark, and here I'm on the PPS, on the deputy provincial secretary of PPS. PPS is a advocacy group for professionals in the Western Cape actually professionals forum. So there's a couple of questions that I have, and I just want to double check some of them are directed at the Premier, Honorable Premier, and some of the staff. I just want to you said something about the organizational culture, about people management, and you said something, and I just want to get some clarity on this in terms of the HRD position specifically. I understand based on what Mr. Dagmo said that, and what you guys have said, that the health and education runs on its own sort of environment. But you said something that HRDs must be advertised when they are coming up on time. Does that apply to health and education as well? you're nodding yes?
Thank you.
So I'll give you
5 minutes. I'm going to give another 2 to complete the question.
No, no, I'm done.
You're done?
Yeah, I'm done. I'm waiting for the answer now, and then you'll see if we can follow up.
No, 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 no. I'll make it. You're not good. Okay.
Okay.
Thank
now,
you.
Hold on a second. I ask you outside. You give me an opportunity to take questions.
Yeah.
And if there's answers or not, because I need to get clarity from the legal service also, because I have a follow-up on that.
Okay.
If you don't mind.
Sir,
I'm talking about transparency now and being here in Chelsea.
Okay. Well, first of all, you're allowed to speak, because I'm allowed to speak.
Sure.
Okay. Based on the answers that we get,
sure.
I'll use my judgment as chairperson, so you're empowered to give you a follow-up question or not. But remember, the question, the answer you're going to get,
mm-hmm.
is not the answer you're going to like.
Are you making that predetermining now?
No, no, I'm just saying, because I can sense that you're looking for answers that you would like to agree with. I can sense it.
No, no.
Okay.
Chief, don't read the souls in here.
Ooh, no,
right?
I don't know that.
Chief, don't read the souls in here. I'm asking a question because I need to understand and get clarity around what the position of the legal services are, because I have something that can... You want me to ask that question now?
Sir?
No, I'm asking. You want me to ask that question now? You got my 7 minutes, and then ask the question, and you will hopefully get an answer.
Chief, let's go ahead. Please answer your last minute and ask your question, because I'm not going to see where this is going. I will not give you an opportunity to answer again. Please ask
the
last question.
So this is the last question?
Ask the last question.
Okay, so this is to legal services. The reason I'm asking you this question specifically, I spoke with the state attorney, and I don't know if you guys are, and this is where I need to go. We have a case that sits in the education department, and if you remember the question I asked you, that oversight over the or next to their own legal services, they are the principal of a school that needs to have a fund recovery. She was found in the fund, she said you put two charges. The amount of money is in the street, but anyway, she played guilty. The state advisor or the Michigan government, I understand, is a client of the complainant in this matter. I instructed the state attorney not to take action, but to have a discussion with the principal first. Now, according to the state attorney, that was highly unusual because the principal is going to seem to go, to leave her alone, and that the matter is not sitting back was appropriate for the responsible legal department, again, not sure if it is with you or with education. The challenge is that I would complain and raise the issue of the corruption of the principal. Was it MEC for education? The MEC was unable in this chamber to say that there was no corruption. It was only after the insistence of national government intervening in that matter that the full on investigation was in that matter. And then subsequently, she played guilty. So I'm not sure if it appears that there's a, I don't say cover up, but it's, you know, people are slow walking and seeing through the process because the matter was concluded in the August of 2018. So I'm not sure if you're the right person, or maybe you can tell me you're the right person, so that I can ensure that justice is concluded. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Sir,
that concludes all your questions.
Yeah.
I'll ask the department to respond, and if they don't have information with them. Because I can already sense that you wouldn't know who's PD is a council member or not. So it's kind of stuff like that. I doubt you there. So respond to what you can, and the rest will come to you when you see the last response.
Thank you very much. I'll start with responding to the ones that I can. First of all, the question is one about organizational culture. And obviously, that's not in this report, it's about going forward. And that is really a space that I really want to work on. I think I said that earlier, that I truly believe that if you work on your internal organizational culture, build a team amongst the 84,000 staff members that work for the provincial government, that at the end of the day, you actually deliver better services to the clients out there, which are the citizens of this province. And so, you know, it's not reported in this annual report, but it is definitely very key part of the plan and program going forward, and we will be developing many programs, and we will be working on best practice that we can find so that we do help with that organizational culture. Part of that question was about the head of department, and all HODs, when they are appointed in the system that we have, what happens is they go through an interview process. At the end of the day, I am the individual responsible for signing off and entering into that contract
continuing in that vein, and the position that I have asked that we inculcate here in our government, is we'll start at top level, but it's that it's not just an automatic renewal at the end of your 5-year contract that you automatically get renewed. Saying that we put it open to an open process so that individuals within the government itself can look at perhaps challenging for a senior post. The same thing would put the head of the department also under pressure to make sure that they are performing. And it also then tests the whole system, because it starts getting outside opportunity also to push and test the system. There is something new, it's also not in this review, it will be reviewed at the end of this next year. And then we can start to answer questions on what we've picked up. We need to try and understand when you bring something in new. It has a disruptive nature to it, but I'm really looking forward to hoping that it also has an opportunity nature to it. Specifically, people preparing themselves for jobs in this organisation, and of course, that organisational culture means eventually it's got to be a new culture that we're developing about how do we create opportunity for people in this whole government. I want to link that through to the, and that was actually number three, the issue around political affiliation and jobs in this government. I want the HR department to actually answer the detail on it, but quite frankly, that would not be tolerated whatsoever in this government. You don't get a job or not get a job based on your political affiliation, and so definitely I would stand for that at any stage. People can raise that issue with me because it may not be part of our HR process. We have to have open, transparent HR processes, and that definitely is not just one of them that we cannot tolerate, but we can also ask the HR department for how we make sure that is not something that is brought into the processes of new jobs or the allocation of jobs in this province. Then with regard to broadband, I think there's some quite detailed questions there that need to that will be answered. But perhaps when we look at the decision around investing in broadband versus other things, and of course those are the big decisions that have to be made in any government, when we go through our MTech processes where every department comes along and puts projects or programs on the table, they need to be able to justify why those projects are going to be budgeted for. And so the economics department, or now where we've got actually the broadband, which was a three-stream project initially, and actually shifted the three departments, now sitting all centered in this department. I've got no doubt that when that decision was made around broadband, it was the right decision. And I've been part of it in the process of rolling it out. I remember the initial, in my responsibility, the initial free Wi-Fi hotspots, and seeing the difference that those made in small little villages like Post Runton, which got the first free Wi-Fi hotspot, and seeing the impact that it had on citizens in a remote area far away from normal connectivity. To Robertson, to Atlantis, and even to Delft, which were those of the first pilot projects, and seeing the impact that project has had. And today, if you go to Delft, out of that pilot project, there are 27 towers across Delft serving households where you can order sugar from the spotter shop at the end of the road. That shop doesn't even carry the stock is in some warehouse. The taxi driver delivers it at the end of the day after he's done his route, and everybody gets their little cut. It's sort of like a locally designed and innovative entrepreneur that's built almost a local Amazon. But overall, if I look at the impact, and bearing in mind that we as a region have to be competitive, especially with the fourth industrial revolution coming out of the question that was asked earlier. And seeing that what has happened in the last few years as to how both private sector but also government interventions, and government interventions on broadband specifically, is how we get broadband to areas that the private sector
morning earnings at broadband too. And that's been a big component of the investments in the broadband, but also getting governments to be much more efficient and connected. So suddenly a clinic somewhere in this province, also in a remote area, could actually be connected globally and get a second opinion via a scan from some clinic in India or in America. And right down to the actual measurement at the end of the day, where suddenly we find ourselves as a region being globally competitive, and in the last independent survey showing Africa's tech hub capitals, where you look at Kenya, Lagos, you look at Nairobi and Lagos, a big player from an African continent, you look at Johannesburg, and then you look at Cape Town, Stellenbosch, and now Cape Town, Stellenbosch is actually the top performing ecosystem. And it is how private sector, government sector, our universities, the ecosystems get developed. I think the investment into, from the Bandwidth Bar and the ICANN Center in Healthy River or in Khayelitsha, and seeing how that came from our learning in Woodstock, and how that's created a fintech space that is now globally renowned. People see the fintech development now, broadband plays a part of it. And then, of course, I'm not even getting into education and the possibilities for future education and the kind of pressure that the education department is on, but seeing how disruption is coming in into the education space. So on the back of the broadband, the numbers that the team can give you, there is no doubt that the measurements are there already making the big differences in society, which is exactly where we need to be putting these issues. If I then think there's the other detailed stuff that the DG and the team can deal with, if there's anything else that falls short of them.
Chair, I'll respond on the issue of the appointments. I'm going to ask this Lucas to quickly just deal with the legal part and only on the one related to the co-managers.
Thank you for your question. I think firstly, as you know, we do provide legal services to all the provincial departments, so all 13 of them. Unfortunately, the matters you've raised, I don't have any personal knowledge. I think it's important to understand that we receive requests for legal services to attend. So as much as I would like to know what happens, that unfortunately is one where our role is not involved. If in fact we did have it as a request from the Department of Education, but what I would suggest you do is maybe raise it with the department formally. Alternatively, at the standing committee session, which is probably due to happen because I mean, it's important to understand that we provide legal advice to the department. You know, so we don't liaise directly with people who might have difficulty with the decisions that are ultimately taken, whether or not it was in line with the request. So I think it would be best to raise it.
Thank you.
application and ask for the services being provided to the legal state. Now, the technology set, these things developed by the month, by the day, essentially. However, in our private contracts, we also have the obligation on the service provider to update and refresh with the newer technologies as they become available. We can then engage with them to sit up with the primary contract so that to keep us up to date with the contract. But the detail, unfortunately, we actually compile as a report.
Chair, I just want to respond to the last question, I mean, the point that the chair has made. So I think as the account officer, I need to respond to the issue around how we make appointments. Because also really it's important that that information be shared with the information professional forum by the deputy secretary. Now, I think from where I'm sitting, from that discipline perspective, firstly, all jobs are being advertised. I mean, there's no such issue as jobs are written about candidates. For example, all senior manager posts need to comply with the standard competency framework that is available nationally, that's been published by the UPSA, and there's 11 core competencies which any applicant needs to comply with. If you pull up any senior advertisement from level 13 right through to level 16, I mean, you will see that the competencies or the particular requirements of the job relates to what the department needs to do. So you can pick up the annual report or the annual performance plan of the department, and even given the recent senior management appointments, you will see that there's a direct alignment to what the department needs to do in that particular functional area. During the assessment process, those functional competencies, which is actually being regulated by the Department of Public Service Administration, get tested during each of the interview processes, and there's generally a rigorous process of getting shortlist approved and then the ultimate approval by the respective accounting officers. All of those things are properly documented, and I mean, if there's any particular query on any particular position, you are most welcome to actually raise the questions with each of the particular departments. I mean, in at least my time with Department of Female, whenever there is a query on those things, we pull the files, we pull the records, because we believe in the principle of transparency. I can also assure you that I haven't seen any post being advertised or link or that's a requirement that, you know, for any political party affiliation. I mean, we are professionals in the space, and we want to conduct our work as professionals in this space. So those two things, I think it's important to note that no jobs are looking for particular candidates. There's not an issue around particular culture of any particular political party being pushed. And normally, if the posts are not called, there are reasons. And in terms of the precepts, we would advertise the post publicly. If we don't get any particular person, then we can either re-advertise it, or alternatively, you can apply to go through a formal headhunting open process, and that process must be approved by each of the sector counterparts. Chair, but just lastly, all our senior positions, in fact, all positions get advertised in the media, so that's a permanent positions. The senior management positions get advertised nationally. It also goes into the national bulletin. That is also a particular requirement, and there's transparency around the banks. No one can argue that they haven't seen it first. Obviously, given sometimes the cost of stuff, and also, you know, targeting some of your lower level positions, you can advertise it in your local newspapers that actually sometimes even is not in drugs and stuff like that. So even your local people can access it, and then we also have a portal where you can anytime access the job for any of the departments. You can go in there and click the Department of Female, the Department of Education, you'll get a list of posts that is available. It's very easy to register on the portal, and once you register on the portal, it's actually a click of a button, you can apply for 100 posts automatically. So it's a very easy process
that you've seen live over the last while. Oh, on the foreign workers chain, there is a total of five, and I mean one sits in the chief risk advisor space, the other one sits in capacity audit, and then also there's also a law advisor, and then there's also in the MNP space. And again, on that, given the questions that's been asked, where they're from, what do they do, etc., we can actually provide that information. So we can package it. I'm sure we'll get the information from the committee coordinator. We'll send this information to the committee coordinator. We'll then make contact with a member of the committee, and the other member will then have access to that information. But we all we are with.
Thank you very much, you and your team, for your first annual report, for that on your report. We do appreciate that you took the time to sit through all of this this morning. And it's really been, to the officials who've been there for the last year, well done on another team audit, another job well done. And we look forward to your interaction next year, on the same method. So if there's anything else you want to say, you are excused.
For 100,000
yes, of course.
I will say that they set a good program for the year so that we can create that. I mean, this is how the office works, so we need to create that oversight space. We can do all those issues that can improve the quantity for those that are considering that. And can I also just say to you all the people for the department, thank you very much for the dedication.
Thank you.
5 international aid strategy, and yeah, the committee further is all the chairperson's allocation.